So yes, that session will be recorded, and the recording will be available and posted on Channel 9. So welcome everyone again. It's a pleasure to have you here. Happy that you take time to do that with us. This is an open call. It's open to customers and partners, and there's some Microsoft employees in here as well. All the material that will be discussed is public information, so no NDA stuff is to be discussed. So if you do want to discuss that kind of stuff, please reach out to your Microsoft account team. The session is being recorded, and all material will be posted on Channel 9, but you can reach the ak.ms/Azure Networking Fridays link, which might be easier to recall than the Channel 9 URL. So feel free to go there. You also have a recap of all the previous sessions that I highly encourage you to take a look at. So the agenda for today, well, first of all, we're going on holiday hiatus as of this is, in other words, this is the last session of 2016. So that's what it is. Then we're going to do a little bit of a networking 0 to 60, like we've done in the previous sessions. And then we have our special guests this week, Frank Ray, who's our Director of Network Acquisitions here at Microsoft, as well as people from Kemp Technologies, who are going to be running a little bit of a presentation of their virtual appliances for us. And after that, we've got the open Q&A on top of the hour. So thank you for having been present all that time for that fall season. We're certainly looking forward to repeating the series this winter and spring after the holidays. And feel free to look at the blog. The blog post is that's exactly what this URL is referring to, akms/Azure Networking Fridays, and you got the hyperlink on the Channel 9 hyperlink there, and you can all see that link. Everything is there. Presentation will be posted there as well as that video recording. So, what is Azure Networking? Well, Azure Networking really relies on a global network that we've deployed. We've in fact have the second largest network in the world, and Azure and all its regions, which represent 36 regions, which is more than double what AWS has, is every the idea here is that we want to be close to your workloads. All right, so we've got this network that's put together for you guys, and there's over 1.6 million miles, that's huge, of fibers just within our data centers. That's something you guys can take advantage of, and you can use ExpressRoute to connect there, as we've talked in some of these discussions already. So the Azure services that you've heard about, you've talked about, you're using, there are platform services, there's infrastructure services, and quite frankly, those services allow you to build pretty much what you want. But we're going to be focusing on this talk, as you know, on the networking portion, which is one component of the infrastructure here. So we're going to be talking about virtual networking. We're going to be talking about ExpressRoute, about gateways, the other topics we've talked about in other sessions, but this session is specifically going to be focusing on that. So the big picture, right? Azure networking, one of the core components of it is the virtual networks. And the virtual networks, you can think of this if you're an enterprise networking person as a VRF, which is an acronym used in the networking world to say an isolated network. So a virtual network is an isolated network, and in this isolated network, you define your own address space. You bring your own network kind of thing, right? So we don't dictate what IP you use. You use whatever you see fit, whatever works within your environment and for you. And you get to control the flow of the traffic because you can use virtual appliances, as we'll talk later with Kemp. But you could also use, for other reasons, you could use UDRs, user-defined routes, to control the flow of the traffic and use network security groups to secure that. So how do you get there? Right? You got this whole thing that's running it within the cloud, but you need to connect to it somehow. Right? So you connect, the first obvious way is through the internet, where some users could access public endpoints that are available, that you make available for them, either because this is a web app or because this is, some other services you would want to expose. And you can certainly expose a virtual machine directly by exposing, remote desktop protocol or exposing SSH if it would be a Linux VM. And you'd be able to connect from anywhere to that virtual machine, as long as the policies allow that, because you can certainly restrict that from being one specific location to access it only from one specific location, or not open it at all, or open it widely depending on what kind of services it is, right? So there's ACLs that you can put in place. There's load balancing if you were to have services that have multiple VMs that are to serve for HTTP traffic, for example. You would put a load balancer, and those are all services that are part of the native Azure fabric that you can extend using ISV partners like CAMP that we'll be talking about a little bit later. There's also DNS service hosting, there's Azure Traffic Management, and we have this whole DDoS protection scheme around all the endpoints that are published on the internet. They are all protected by the Azure DDoS protection that we have put in place. We have huge capacity to handle these attacks, and we make it work for you guys. And so when the internet connection to your services is not necessarily what you want or doesn't answer the need, then you got backend connectivity, which we highly encourage you to take a look at. And then the backend connectivity, well, we've been talking about this many times, but there's ExpressRoute, but there's also VPNs. And by VPNs, you can do site-to-site VPNs or point-to-site VPNs. It really depends on the kind of workloads that you're working on. So if you're talking about site-to-site VPNs or point-to-site VPNs, which is really kind of the entry point, normally you would be looking at, a point-to-site VPN is, think of a VPN client that's installed in a workstation that's connecting to a virtual network gateway, and it gets allocated an IP just like you do when you're on your on-premises, right? When you're on-premise, you connect, or when you're at home and you connect on-premise, you probably connect to a VPN device somewhere. It's very much the same thing. And then if you go to site-to-site VPN, this is where your network starts to be open to each other, where you could have really hybrid applications that are sitting in the cloud and that are able to reach back on your network on-premises. So you could do that with site-to-site VPNs, with a drawback that, it's on the internet, so you can have some... Those VPNs could be highly available. That could kind of help quite a bit. But if you need more than that, or if you need an SLA, this is where you would go to the ExpressRoute. Right? The ExpressRoute will allow you to go from 50 megabits per second all the way up to 10 gigabits per second. And that allows you, of course, to have much, much, much more bandwidth that you would have with a traditional VPN or with a site-to-site VPN. And you get an SLA of 99.95% for it. So ExpressRoute, right? How do you connect there? There's ExpressRoute is really a connection between your network, your MPLS network, your corporate network, to Microsoft's network. And I've been in many, many, many conversations with customers, and there's sometimes a confusion around, well, is this really going to connect to data center, I'm connecting to US East, or I'm connecting to US West or Canada Central. It's not how it happens. You really connect your network to our network at a Meet Me location that we refer to on our website as an ExpressRoute location. And these locations, we have 35 around the world, right? So you see them on the screen right now. There's all those orange dots. This is where we have multiple partners that you see on the partner page of our ExpressRoute site, and you talk to these guys, and you can connect your network to ours. And even if your partner is not your provider, your MPLS provider is not listed there, you still can connect to us by getting to one of the exchange locations where we put our gears, and you would work with an exchange partner at that point. But you definitely can connect to ExpressRoute no matter what the landscape is, right? And there's national clouds as well. There's US Gov, there's Germany and China. Those are isolated networks, isolated regions that you can connect to if you need to do businesses in those countries. And we got a growing global ecosystem of ExpressRoute partners. You have a list over there. But as I said, even if your partner or MPLS provider isn't listed there, it doesn't mean that you will not be able to connect to ExpressRoute. You can still have those guys bring a router or a set of routers all the way up to an exchange provider, guys like Equinix, like CoLogix, like Megaport, and probably others that could allow you to connect to ExpressRoute. So That said, getting back to the virtual networking thing, we have this concept of virtual data center, right? And where does that stem from? Think about when you guys are moving one line of business, or there's a line of business that is thinking about moving an application to the cloud, and then they work their thing, and eventually they go to see the IT guys, and the IT guy says, hey, if you want to move this application to the cloud, you're going to need to put one firewall, and you're going to need to put the domain controller, and you're going to need to put this monitoring system, and so on and so forth. So line of business one does this and creates all those services and create their virtual network and just instantiates all of that. And then the next week, line of business number two comes around and says the same thing. Well, I need to put this line of business app in the cloud. And the IT guys say, well, you will need to put a firewall, you'll need to put this and this and this and that. And eventually, line of business two puts the same stuff and or part of the same stuff that line of business one put in the cloud, and then line of business three does the same, and so forth. And eventually, there's a rogue guy to the right that just doesn't put the firewalls. So you would certainly not want to do that, right? So the key to that is by using VNet peering. So what is VNet peering? Well, VNet peering is this new feature that allows you, well, new, it's generally available, it's been there for a couple months already, but it's a feature that allows you to connect your virtual networks together such that you could put in a centralized location all this shared infrastructure that I've talked about. So all those firewalls, monitoring systems, domain controllers are all stuff that you would need for all kinds of reasons to put in each of your applications. You could centralize them. So you could have a set of centralized firewall and use user-defined routes, for example, in one of the spokes, in a hub and spoke topology, to reuse and reach those firewalls to get back on premise or to browse the internet. So one of the things that it gives you is also the ability to have like ultra high performance networking between the networks, between the virtual networks, just in the same way as if it were one physical network. Not one physical, but one big virtual network, one big VNet, right? With the caveat that they have to be in the same region. In the same Azure region. So if you have US East, all your stuff is in US East, this is something you can do. If it were to be another region, then you would have to use other mechanisms. You could use ExpressRoute to connect those clusters of VNets together, right? It's possible to do it across subscription, and it's possible to do it from ARM to ASM, for those of you guys who are familiar with that. And it is possible to leverage the gateways, the ExpressRoute gateways or VPN gateways, of the hub by the spokes. So that's really what enables you to, deploy more and more applications without having to duplicate everything, and by centralizing equipment or virtual equipment and reducing costs. And we got a growing, again, ecosystem of network virtual appliance partners, one of which is we have the pleasure to have with us today, which is Kemp Technologies. That'll be talking a little bit later. But before that, I've got a guest this week who's Frank Ray. And Frank is the Director for Global Network Acquisitions here at Microsoft. And he's going to be talking to us a little bit about our networking story and how we got to where we are from a networking standpoint. So, Frank, feel free to take it away.
Thank you very much, Olivier, and thank you everybody for the invitation to come here and speak today. So, within the Global Network Acquisition Group, one of the overarching goals that we have is really refining, redefining, and then refining what Microsoft's distribution model is. So, in the past, as a box software company, working with OEMs and working with retailers to get software into stores for people to buy or onto devices that people purchased, required a very different distribution model than we have today. And so being an online service provider, obviously it's hard to be an online service provider if you're not online. So the network plays a very critical part in how we move our bits to our customers, how we provide our services and applications. And that's the overarching, focus that we have within the acquisition group and the engagements that we have both internally and externally. And we have had a saying going for a while, last century you logged into Windows and went online. This century, you go online and log into Windows, to really stress the importance of having your network connectivity to be able to deliver your products and services. So part of this and part of what we do on a regular basis is a very close engagement, both internally within Microsoft and externally with network service providers and infrastructure owners, with a clear focus on how we efficiently deliver services and applications to our customers via the network infrastructure. And that could be, you know, downloads on Xbox, downloads from the Windows Store, data sovereign products offerings such as what we have in Germany, Bing search index traffic, all of the different online properties, which is a lot of really, I think, what differentiates Microsoft from some of our peers in our space in the cloud and content space. You know, there are some that have, you know, a single stream of bits from server to client that they're solving for, and they do that in a really amazing way. You know, Microsoft has over 200 different properties with different policies, requirements, customer bases. So it creates a very challenging environment to be able to address all of those, and it's those challenges that, at least me personally, think makes it very interesting to try to solve these for our customers. So within this strong alignment, you know, the key activity that we try to undertake within the Global Network Acquisition Group is really to link the logical infrastructure with the physical infrastructure. And by that, I mean we look at our product roadmaps, we look at our engineering and technical roadmaps, and try to align that with the infrastructure that is or is not available from a networking perspective within the marketplace. So the example that I usually give is Office 365, or let's say Azure ExpressRoute in this case, comes to us and says, hey, we would like to do an ExpressRoute deployment in Timbuktu. And then it's partly our job to say, well, what we need in for our requirements, our specifications, is not available in the market today. It's going to take, 8 months for that to be constructed. So we need to make sure that our product roadmap is aligned with that. Or yes, it's available today and we can deploy in 2 months and, you know, let's start working on partnerships and working on discussing with our customers how we connect. So it's really that alignment between the logical and the physical layer and what it looks from a physical topology perspective to get our bits as close as possible to our end users. And to this point, there's a large focus on, you know, availability, resiliency, diversity, latency, the capillarity of what the network looks like, as well as future potential capacity. I am in the acquisition group, so I'd be remiss to say that there is not a large focus on cost, but when we're looking at the performance of the network and what we're looking to try to accomplish both today and for the things that we don't even know about tomorrow, those items that I just mentioned are, you know, play a key role in linking that physical together. So to this point, you know, we've undergone a large, pretty significant evolution within Microsoft over the last, let's say, three to four years. You know, before I started and before everybody within Microsoft really started down this journey, as a box software organization, you know, the network was not a critical part of our supply chain. So in the eyes of the telecommunications industry, Microsoft was still a pure enterprise consumer of network services. And I use enterprise consumer specifically and consciously because the way the I speak from the eyes of the telecommunications industry, we were perceived as not a wholesale customer, not a network service provider. We were a pure enterprise business customer and charged in that fashion for the services that we were purchasing. And usually at the same time, we were outsourcing a lot of the network activities to our providers because the main focus was primarily, way back in the day, just really connecting offices to ensure that our corporate network had access and availability and network to serve our employees. As then the internet developed and we started having automatic downloads for Windows, downloads on the Xbox Store, and then ultimately this change into being one of the premier cloud providers today, the network started to really, really have a very large, large role in what our actual supply chain is. So the evolution that we started and what we tried to go undertake here with the telecommunications industry was to take us from first an enterprise consumer to a wholesale customer, and then from a wholesale customer to an actual investor in underlying network infrastructure. And the reason we did this is because, you know, we have a very different engagement with the telecommunications space than other peers within, within our industry. A lot of network service providers out there today are also very large customers of Microsoft. So we wanted to be very conscious of the relationship that providers have and with Microsoft. And so when you go from being an enterprise consumer to an investor, there's a very large shift within the business relationship. And, you know, we wanted to be sensitive to the business relationship. So we wanted to move through these phases to ensure that everybody understood where we were going, and we also had the time to understand where network service providers fit within this evolution, rather than just making hard black-white choices and then moving forward. And also, in some cases, you know, we may not ever get to being an investor in some places. We may just remain a customer of a network service provider, and then the relationship needs to be defined that way. So that's the type of evolution that we've undergone over the last 3 to 4 years, and how we go out, engage with the market, plan, acquire, and develop the underlying network infrastructure that both connects our data centers together, and more importantly, connects our customers with one another and connects them with the Microsoft cloud. And I think a really good example of how far along in the process that we've come, I think, is the project that we announced back in May, which was a transatlantic cable build that we've called Morea. And this was a pretty significant project for both Microsoft and also in the wider market. This project is a partnership together with Facebook, where we got together and realized that we were all looking at the same thing and trying to accomplish some of the similar attributes with the underlying infrastructure, and decided that it's probably best for us to cooperate here and work on building something like this together. What we had seen and challenges that we had seen in the market is that the timelines to deliver large-scale infrastructure projects such as this over the last 10 years have continually gotten longer and longer. As prices has dropped and margins have become squeezed for network service providers, they were moving their CapEx funds to invest in other parts of their business, rightfully so. So whereas 15, 20 years ago, you had the likes of AT&T, Verizon, France Telecom, British Telecom, investing in these cables and the landing stations that bring them onto shore, they've all moved out of that business and are investing more heavily in their mobile businesses or turning themselves into content companies themselves. So we had seen over the last 5 to 10 years, a cable project such as this could take up to 5 years before it even got developed. While at the same time, in today's digital economy, product development cycles and time to market, it was getting shorter and shorter. So it was this dichotomy that we were trying to address. So whereas similar projects took 5 years to come to fruition, we sat down with Facebook, ran RFPs, developed with the manufacturer, and signed contracts and started construction within 1 year. And the purpose of this cable is, again, due to the bilateral relationship that we have with the network service provider marketplace, we really wanted to do something that not only served Microsoft, but also serve the wider global internet infrastructure. So if you look at the east coast of North America today, there's 13 cables that land in North America, one in Halifax and one in Florida. The one in Florida does not carry web scale traffic. And all other 11 cables land in the New York, New Jersey region within around, let's say, a 20 to 30 mile square radius of one another. So in 2012, when I was still on the East Coast, just before I joined Microsoft, Hurricane Sandy hit, and when it hit the New Jersey coast and moved its way up into Manhattan, it knocked out all 11 of those cables and isolated internet traffic, aside from the cable landing in Halifax. So Microsoft's network was greatly impacted due to this event. So if you take that and natural disasters and force majeure events such as that, and then you also look at the actual underlying routing table of the global internet, you see that there's a huge flow of traffic between the Amsterdam-Frankfurt region of Europe and the Northern Virginia region of the United States, where Northern Virginia being like the largest data node today. So this cable serves to add additional resiliency and diversity into not only Microsoft's cloud, but also the underlying global internet infrastructure itself, and serves to try to address these large traffic flows in the underlying global internet routing table. So all of this is meant to go back and focus on those core pillars that we talked about before with availability, resiliency, diversity, latency. The capillarity is the next phase that we're going to look to go into, but this is, I think, a good example of the types of investments that we're trying to make within the network to address the resiliency of our underlying cloud infrastructure itself, the pipes, the buildings, the servers, as well as provide future potential capacity for yet not yet developed applications, such as those being talked about today in the industrial and healthcare verticals for, say, HoloLens. So that's, in a nutshell, what it is that we're working on and what we're focusing on. I'm also happy to take any questions if anybody has any.
All right, thank you so much, Frank. With that, we're happy to take questions in the IM as we go, and but in the meantime, we'll pass it along to our friends from Kemp who are joining us. And so if you guys want to take, I guess, Jeff, you're going to be kicking it off, so take it away.
Awesome. Thanks, Olivier, and really, really appreciate you guys having us here. It's great to be on. We've really enjoyed the fact that you have, expanded the horizon of, what was once an express route focused, set of content to a much broader Azure networking set of presentations. Really helpful and great to learn about sort of general overviews and certainly the details of the plumbing from Frank. We generally don't play at that level. We're much more in the tenant space, but it's always great to learn that stuff. So I'm Jeff Fisher, VP of Strategic Alliances. It's fantastic to be here with everyone today. I'm joined by a couple of my colleagues, Kurt Young, who's on my team, and will do the bulk of the content. I'm not going to take up too much time doing the overview. I want to let Kurt get into the meat of the content and the demo. We also have John Brownhut on as well, our chief scientist, who's manning the chat line. So feel free to IM with questions. Next slide, please. So we're going to go through a very, very brief Kemp overview, and then I'm going to turn it over to Kurt, who's going to really talk to you about Kemp 360, which is our relatively new management and monitoring platform, the bulk of which will be a demo, and then just a quick slide on next steps and contact info. Next slide, please. So hopefully you guys have heard of us before, and if you have, it's probably been in the context of our LoadMaster product set, which became extremely popular in the Exchange world, probably starting around Exchange 2007, but really sort of peaking with Exchange 2010. We are the ones who manufacture those great-looking gold boxes, as we call them, our physical appliances. We've got a pretty diverse customer base with about 17,000 and counting, and more than 40,000 unit deployments. obviously people, you know, putting HA pairs out there, but also increasingly as we've been moving into the enterprise space over the past few years, we've got customers who are deploying dozens of Loadmasters, and that really sort of drove the need for us to have an enterprise class management framework, which is what Chem 360 is. We have been doing a ton of work with Azure for the past 3 years. We were the first ADC in the Azure cloud way back in the day before the marketplace. We were the first certified ADC at marketplace launch in Q4 of 2014, and now have become a top 10 Azure marketplace offering. We are very much a software company. About 50% of our business comes from software or virtual ADCs, as opposed to 10% for the rest of the sector. And we were really privileged to be named by Gartner yet again for the second year in a row as a visionary in their ADC Magic Quadrant. Next slide, please. So this is the core offering. Again, we're not going to go through it today. We've got a lot of content online to help you get up to speed as to what Loadmaster does. But it is a very capable layer 4 through 7 application delivery controller with all the features that you would expect. It's extremely easy to provision and license and get up and running. We pride ourselves on simplicity. We've got tons of application templates covering just about any Microsoft workload you can think of, and it just really makes it a no-brainer for creating the virtual services and publishing applications. Next slide, please. And then before I turn it over to Kurt, just a quick snap of some of the most common use cases that we're seeing, the roughly 1,000 Azure customers that we have using us for, primarily, again, on the Loadmaster side, you know, advanced content switching for doing, traffic direction and management, lots and lots of hybrid deployments, especially with ADFS. I would say is really growing in number. GSLB, or what we call Geo, is becoming critically important, especially in the context of Azure Stack, where we believe we have a huge play, and we've been working on that platform since TP1 dropped in January. We already have a preview build available, and we'll encourage you guys to reach out with the contact information we'll provide if you're interested in testing that. And last but not least, all of the security features that you would expect enterprise class ADC to have, from a WAF to reverse proxy and all kinds of authentication. So again, I don't want to take up any more time. Kurt's stuff is much more interesting, so I will pass it over to him.
All right, cool. All right, thanks, Jeff. So kind of, and again, well, I want to move through these slides so we can get to the demo. But you know, Kemp 360 Cloud, it's an offering from Kemp that includes several products, features, and services. And if we start off at the top, we of course have the virtual ADC, right, which is a very important piece of this portfolio, since without the Loadmaster, we really don't have the need for the rest of Chem 360 Cloud. So you'll be deploying your VLM to publish and load balance your workloads throughout your on-premise, you know, your private clouds, your public clouds. But as you start, you know, rolling out these ADCs within your environment, you find that, you know, it becomes difficult to size and know really what kind of throughput and transactions per second you're going to require per workload. You want to, you know, basically overpay for a license that you're not going to utilize, and you also don't want to underpay or undersize your ADC and not be able to support your traffic, right? So we provide, you know, sizing tools for several workloads, Microsoft in particular. But again, customers are still entering this data based on assumptions, right? So, you know, in comes MELA, right? It's our metered enterprise license agreement. So here you can actually deploy unlimited ADCs and with no cap or limit on throughput or TPS. And what we do is we're going to monitor these ADCs. We're going to pull these metrics and then bill you based on the peaks that you use. So we'll take the total throughput and TPS of all the load masters that you deploy, and essentially you're going to fall into a billing tier, right? And then you can move up and down between these billing tiers depending on how much traffic you use, right? We also provide professional services to help customers or you know, system integrators as well to make that transition to the cloud. So whether you're migrating, you know, your LoadMaster between clouds, or maybe you're migrating from another ADC to the LoadMaster, you know, we have you covered there as well. So as Jeff mentioned, you know, Canva's released this, you know, Canva 360 family of products here, right, which include both Central as well as Vision. So starting with Central, this is really what we're going to focus this session on in the demo. But it's basically your dashboard. It's a single pane of glass to manage and maintain and monitor your ADCs, collect, you know, performance metrics, logs, et cetera. We have the ability to add some third-party ADCs, which you'll see, to monitor some of these metrics as well. And, again, I'll show you that as part of the demo. And finally, we have Vision, right? Kemp360 Vision, which is our proactive monitoring and alerting service, right? So Kemp support is going to, you know, monitor your LoadMasters 24/7, 365 for any issues or even maybe even potential issues that may occur, you know, based on the data we're collecting. So we may see some unusual spikes on memory or processor on the ADC, or receive some connection errors, something like that, or even some health checks that are failing. And we can notify you and work with you to resolve those as well. Let's move on to, okay. So Kemp360 Central, we actually, in our demo, we're actually doing this in Azure Stack, but we're also providing 360 Central and Azure as well as all the major virtualization platforms. So it's in the marketplace, available via BYOL. You can spin it up, and actually you're able to add two devices for free, right? Obviously, any more than that, you're going to have to you know, reach out and contact us to license based on the amount of devices you're looking to add. So here it's kind of building out our demo environment. You maybe have some, you know, some hybrid workloads, you know, kind of spread throughout, you know, Azure and now Azure Stack. You deploy a LoadMaster for each, or, you know, a pair of LoadMasters for each of these workloads. And as Jeff said earlier, you know, we're seeing that, you know, we're, some of these enterprises are actually deploying many, many ADCs, LoadMasters, and hence the reason for 360. I mean, we definitely have some environments where we have deployed our larger scale, you know, big boxes in front of, you know, several workloads, but we're seeing more and more this approach, since a lot of time we're actually working with the application owners and they're actually deploying the LoadMasters to for their specific workloads. I mean, as Jeff said, we're really easy to use with our templates, so on and so forth. And also when you start adding the idea of the virtual networking, and it's just kind of the way everything is moving. So here again, we're basing this on workloads, but obviously another relevant type of this deployment would obviously be DevOps, where you have you know, dev, test, stage, production, each of them running their own LoadMasters or pair of LoadMasters. So now that we have all of these ADCs all over the place, obviously, you know, how do we manage and maintain these? So obviously, in comes you know, 360 Cloud, and then what we can do is we can actually just kind of feed all of these ADCs into 360 Cloud to do all of the, again, maintenance, monitoring, and so on and so forth. So without further ado, we can kind of jump in and just take a quick tour of 360 Central. Okay, so here we 360 Central. So we'll go ahead and log in. So here we, on our monitoring tab, we have a list of all the ADCs that we have connected here. So we have our Azure Stack environment, which is running some Exchange, Skype for Business, SharePoint, ADFS. We also have SharePoint running in our Azure public. Also in Azure, we have some other workloads, IIS, that are actually leveraging HA Proxy and Nginx. And then actually in AWS, we have BigIP, and we also have the AWS ELB. But as you start clicking into some of these ADCs, you'll start seeing some details about what's running on that particular one. So here we have Exchange running a bunch of virtual services as well as SharePoint. And here we can see we have a real server that's offline. We can also go in and actually look at some of the stats, some of the user CPU, system CPU, as well as memory. Now, this is a lab environment, so not much activity going on here. But we can also look at metrics, right? So here we can look at metrics based on hours, days, weeks, months, or even years, based on the network and transactions and such. Also, if we can also get some of the information out of these third parties, like for instance the BigIP, we can see some of the virtual services and real servers running within that, as well as AWS ELB. Now we are currently working with Azure team to add the Azure load balancer. Just trying to again pull whatever we can from the APIs there to add that to the mix of third parties as well. But if we go into SharePoint and we go into the service configuration, here's where we can manage some of the virtual services. So we can go ahead and we can add new virtual services here. We can go in and we can edit virtual services, delete virtual services as well. And if we're actually doing a move, maybe from on-prem to public cloud, we have the idea of actually we can move these virtual services between load masters using our VS Motion. So we can actually go in here, we can select the target load master we want to move this virtual service to, and then we can either copy or move that virtual service between clouds. If we then jump into our system configuration, we can do things like connect to our, there's a link to our web user interface. We can do functions as far as doing a reboot of the loadmaster. Now here, I'm actually connected to just the SharePoint loadmaster, but if I select Azure Stack, now I have a list of all of the loadmasters that are running within that group. So I can select multiple devices, and I can schedule, again, a reboot, or I can, again, reboot them right away. As far as our application workload templates, as Jeff was saying, these kind of help our customers, again, get the workload configured based on best practices. What we can do is we can go ahead and select a template, for instance, Exchange 2016, and we can just select that loadmaster, and we can go ahead and upload that template to that loadmaster. Doing update firmware. So first off, we could see what the current version, so in this case 7.1.36 is running on these. And then we can go ahead and we can select multiple loadmasters, and we can pick a, in this case 7.2.36, and then we can schedule this or update them right away, but you could schedule them. Obviously, we wouldn't want to repeat a firmware update, so we would select never, and then we could just select the date and time that we want to do that firmware update. And then finally, we have our backup and restore. So here we can select backups that were taken before to restore to loadmasters that are listed, and we also have the option, once again, to select multiple devices and schedule that backup, whether it be daily or weekly or monthly, right? We can do that during any time window we would like. Or we can just go ahead and back them up right away if we're going to make a change or something, we want to have that backup. So just take that snapshot and we're good to go. So if we jump into our global repository here, we have our logging, right? So all of our loggings, again, nothing really going on here, but you can export or search through the logs. We have our firmware. So here's where we're uploading those firmware versions, deleting the old ones that we don't need anymore. The templates, same thing here. So we can update the new templates and delete the older ones that we're not using. And here's where we're storing all of our backups that we've been taking from the loadmasters as well. If we go into access control, here's where we can add additional users that can access, whether we give them full access or read-only. We also have group management, where we have the ability to create groups. So in this case, Exchange admins, you'll see we have under the group members, we have the EX admin added here. And under the resources, we're only giving him access to the Exchange loadmaster only. Right. So if I go back to the monitoring and I log out as admin, and I will go back in as EX admin. And now you can see I only have access to that Exchange VLM, and I've lost access to all the other devices that were listed in here. Also, if I go into services, since he's read-only, he has no access to create new virtual services. There's no delete or copy. And also, when you go into edit, he can view, but he cannot make any changes to apply or disable the virtual service. So let's go ahead and go back in as admin and log out. I'll go back in as admin. And now we'll go into the settings. So under the settings, the first thing we can do is we have, our system administration. We can reboot or shut down 360 Central. We have some SMTP settings so we can get alerts if a device goes offline or something like that. SSH access for KEMP support. We also have proxy settings if Central is actually sitting behind a proxy in the environment. License management, here we can update if we want to add more devices. We can either online or offline. Firmware, same thing goes here. We can update the firmware either online or we can do it in offline if it's an isolated environment. And then we come to the metered licensing. So here's where you can kind of generate and download reports to determine that throughput and transactions per second usage on the loadmasters that are licensed with Mila. Again, perhaps you're an enterprise and you need to charge back to the business units that are running these workloads. You can kind of divvy up, split up the costs across the enterprise. Here you can select the date range and generate a report. You also have the option to do a summary report. Or you can actually go and get a more detailed report for those cases that you need that kind of information. And then if we go to schedule tasks, here's where we can just manage those scheduled tasks that we scheduled for backups and reboots and updates and things like that. So that kind of wraps up the tour of 360 Central, and I think we're good on time. So what I'll do is I'll kind of hand this back over to Jeff to wrap up our piece here.
Perfect. Thanks, Kurt. That was great. So just very quickly before we pass back to Olivier, next steps. As Kurt alluded to, we would love you guys to test our stuff out. So you can do that by trying the free Loadmaster SKU on Azure. That's a 20 megabit capped version of our product that's got pretty much all the functionality except for that throughput limitation. KEMP360 Central is up there as well, separate SKU in the marketplace, and that's got that two instance license limit. Certainly happy to provide you guys with NFR licenses if that's applicable, depending on your role. We'd love you to take a look at our Azure Stack demo. That's online on LinkedIn and YouTube. And again, if you're interested in testing the preview build, we have that available. Just have to sign an NDA, and we can get that over to you. So with that said, let me hand it back. My contact information's there. Bhargav, who happens to be in India, was kind enough to take time out of his schedule to join us. So you've seen him on the chat. That's his contact info. He heads up technology for me in the Alliances team. And again, happy holidays to everyone, and look forward to seeing you back on the spring session.
All right, thanks so much. Thanks so much, Jeff, for that presentation and team. It's awesome to have you guys with us. And if there's someone else from the presenters group who can unmute the audience, I'm having a little issue on my end. So you could ask your questions, or you can ask your questions in the IM window, and people can answer until I fix my issue. Okay, guys, were you guys able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So if you, okay, was anyone able to unmute the audience and participant actions in the list of participants on the left?
Libby, you want to take back presenter?
I just did it, Olivia.
Okay, thank you so much. So if you guys want to mute yourself, feel free to do so and ask the questions. I had one question personally from the virtual load masters. When I think I saw one option in the demo, which might be interesting in certain use cases, which would be to source NAT the packets as they go through your load masters. Is this to pretend that they come from the load master? Is this something that's supported? Is this something that you guys can do?
Yes, Olivia, that is John Bronhut here from Kemp. That is a core feature of all loadmasters.
Okay, perfect. That complements very well the internal balancers in Azure, which don't support that, but in certain use cases, that could be quite useful. So thanks for the answer.
True layer seven proxy terminates the TCP and NATs it over.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else wants to get off mute and ask questions? Now's the time to do so.
Looks like we have some more coming in on the chat, so we can take them there.
Sure. Okay.
Olivia, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great.
So are you guys seeing questions in the IM? Unfortunately, I lost visibility over a couple of things. So.
Yeah, the IM is pretty well lit up, so if you want to push forward with whatever other content you have.
No, there's no more content. So,
okay.
If there's other questions, you guys can unmute yourselves, ask the questions. Feel free to answer, guys from Kemp and Frank. A question out loud if they're easier to do so by talking, and if not, when this is done, we'll all wish everybody a nice holiday season. All right. So, guys, if there's no more questions, going on once, twice, we'll just wrap it up. And if you guys want to stay online and have some more questions for the folks from Camp Technologies, well, the floor is yours. And I'll wish everybody a very nice season, holiday season, and we'll all see each other hopefully in January. Keep an eye on the blog post. We'll update the blog shortly after holidays, and we'll see each other soon. So have a great rest of day, everyone. And thanks again very much to Frank from our team, as well as to Jeff, John, and Kurt from Camp Technologies. Have a great great rest of day, everyone, and an awesome weekend.
Thank you. You too, Olivia.
Thanks.